capacity in it. So we'll go ahead and move right along. So our next presentation is by Jen Liu. So.
Thanks for the organizers to squeeze in two presentations, actually, for me for this very popular topic. My first presentation, basically, we reviewed winter manure management regulations and guidelines basically across the world where potential policies are needed to reduce nutrient losses associated with winter applications. And I want to acknowledge my co-authors, Peter Kleiman, Ray Brandt, Tammy Wave from USDA, and Doug Beagle from Penn State, Helena Aronson from Swedish University of Agricultural Sciences, Dan Flatton from University of Manitoba, Rich McDowell from Ag Research New Zealand, Tim Robinson from International Livestock Research Institute, Marini Bachman from NIBIO, Norwegian Institute of Bioeconomy Research, and Hongbin Liu from Chinese Academy of Agricultural Science, and Andrew Shapley from Arkansas University. So let's look at the global livestock distributions. If we look at this map, we will find that across the globe, most of the most dense livestock production are located in the North America, Europe, Asia, some part of Asia, and Oceania, Africa, and South America. But most of the livestock productions are distributed in the temperate and cold zones where winter conditions occur. And if we zoom in just one small portion here, we will find that manure production distribution are locally isolated, and they have different, they are concentrated, they have different distribution concentrations in the local level. So this means for the local work, we also need to pay more attention to the winter manure management. So there are different opinions about manure spreading in winter. First of all, it wastes nutrients and increases risks of nutrient losses to water and creates water quality problems downstream. But also, there are some positive things. When you don't have enough storage, the winter application could be one good option, and it can also reduce workload in spring. And also in spring, often is where the soils are very wet, so winter application can avoid wet soils. And some people argue that it all depends on the climate conditions and soil conditions. So here is a map to summarize the global guidelines. Like across the Europe, all the countries ban winter spreading, and they call it like a closed period. But in the US and Canada, it's more diverse policies in different states, ranging from ban of winter spreading to weather-associated restrictions or management-associated restrictions. Or there are some guidelines instead of regulations, and some states don't have specific regulations or guidelines. And for Australia, it also has guidelines instead of regulations, and New Zealand has some restrictions. But there are also many countries don't have any guidelines, even though livestock production is very important, such as China. And in the US, there are quite in many states, There are more strict rules for large operations defined such as confined animal feeding operations or animal feeding operations, or in some states it's like it's defined if you need a nutrient management plan, then you need to follow some guidelines. Usually these guidelines for large operations are much more strict than for small animal operations. So my first case study is Northern Europe. In the Europe, is what quality problems are, or what quality issues are regulated by European nitrates directives. And the nitrates directives first identify threatened waters, and then to identify nitrate vulnerable zones. For some countries, is all the countries are identified as vulnerable zones. For some, for example, Denmark and Finland, and some countries are just part of the country are identified as vulnerable zones, like Sweden and Norway. And then the authorities establish the codes of good agricultural practice and action programs, and then start to monitor progress in water quality. And here by Northern Europe, I mean the four countries, Norway, Sweden, Denmark, and Finland. And all these countries have regulations on animal densities, so the animal densities are usually low. Actually in the very early age, like in 1990s, there were already subsidies for storage, for required storage. Like for example, for Denmark, the required storage for farmers is like 6 to 9 months, and Finland is like all year round. For Sweden, it's like 6 to 10 months, and for Norway, it's 8 months. So this can guarantee the implementation of closed period. But also there are other complementary regulations, such as maximum rates, you have to incorporate manure after application, or use buffers between application sites and streams, and some requirements for cover crops, and don't apply on frozen soils, like to complement the closed period approach. And our second case study is Chesapeake Bay watershed. Probably you all know that Chesapeake Bay watershed is very large, and it has many, many, like 3 million animal units. And manure contributes roughly 20% of nitrogen, 30% of phosphorus to the bay. Therefore, manure storage is a big concern. Actually, across the U.S., for the winter manure policies, first is federal, the USDA NRS make a federal standard 590, and then the individual states design regulations and guidelines. But the federal standard is very general, and for the different states in the Chesapeake Bay region, it's like Maryland and Delaware adopt a closed period approach, but there are some exceptions. Like Maryland is for low density animal operations, you don't have to implement closed period, and for Delaware, if you are in emergency situations, like Diana presented, like if there is if manure has exceeded storage capacity, then you don't need to follow this, I guess. And for Pennsylvania and Virginia, it's like winter restrictions. For example, in Pennsylvania, if you want to apply manure for solid manure and for liquid manure, there are individual maximum rates allowed to apply, and also you have to follow the rules for field slopes, land cover, and setback from sensitive areas. And for New York and West Virginia, there are general guidelines similar to Pennsylvania and Virginia, but not regulations. And our third case study is Manitoba, Canada. For this region, it's very flat soil, and they have very long freezing seasons from November to April. So 80% of annual runoff occurs as snow melt in spring, like in this figure in April. So since 1998, there was already ban for winter spreading for large operations, and since 2013, the ban has extended to all farms. Our fourth case study is New Zealand. In New Zealand, it's much warmer, and the manure management a little bit different from the northern part of the earth. It's like for the dairy manures, the manures are washed to the ponds, and so they apply the liquid manure, like less than 1% organic matter. So the major concern is the water saturation. And the different, so the regional authorities set catchment water quality limits and identify needs for infant management. Most regions prohibit ponding and runoff of land applications. And the last one is China. There's no specific guidelines, even though there are actually a lot of eutrophication problems. There are some new guidelines coming out, but it's very general without detailed strategies. So there are several major factors affecting winter spreading guidelines. The first is overarching regulations. Like, for example, in European Union, it's driven by nitrates directive, and for the US, Canada, and New Zealand, it's deferred to states, province, or regions. So the guidelines are diverse, and China has no specific regulations. And also, it's up to the winter conditions, like in frozen soils in cold climate regions. There's very little option to choose from, very little option. So the ban of winter spreading is probably the best. But for the temperate regions, there are more possibilities for site-specific guidelines. And also manure storage issues, like differences in need, are driven by production systems and confinement or availability of subsidies. Yet, there were many people helped with this paper, and also for mapping the USA guidelines, I got help from, I also read the white paper mentioned by Diana from Dan Mills, and that saved a lot of time, so I want to acknowledge all these people.